You're listening to the Ordinary Vegan Podcast, where we teach you everything you need to know about adopting a plant-based diet, full or part-time. Our goal is to empower you to live a long and healthy life. You can find today's show at ordinaryvegan.net or on iTunes. If you have any questions, please send an email to questions@ordinaryvegan.net.
Hello, friends, and welcome to Ordinary Vegan's New Labor of Love and podcast number 9. If you're new to this podcast, I am Nancy Montori, a free-spirited, music-loving girl with a passion for health and wellness. I am celebrating my 5-year vegan anniversary on May 1st, 2016, which also happens to be my birthday, just throwing that out there, and I couldn't be healthier or happier. If you're not familiar with a vegan diet, also known as a plant-based diet, a vegan diet consists of unrefined plants. It's a diet based on fruits, vegetables, whole grains like quinoa and brown rice, and legumes like black beans and lentils, and healthy fats like nuts, seeds, and avocados. A plant-based diet does not include meat, eggs, or dairy. There are many reasons why people eat a plant-based diet, and I began my journey for health and wellness. Some people have other reasons. I would like to share this letter I received from Barbara Sweet, and I must say she has the perfect name because this is a very sweet letter. She is responding to a blog post I wrote on ordinaryvegan.net for Earth Day regarding cow's milk and the imprint on the environment. Here is the letter. Hi, Nancy. I am a vegan and I no longer consume cow's milk. I believe most people who read or see the incredible abuse that factory farming bestows on animals, they would simply give up milk. People don't understand how much animals feel and how deeply they think. And these are not bad people. They may even have pets, as I did. But they automatically, unconsciously eat animals and their byproducts. I am 78 years old and have loved animals all my life. But it was only when I began to read books about factory farming that I felt the animals' pain and suffering under humans' rule. Yes, rule, because they are our slaves. These animals are not even treated as sentient beings, which they all are. That is why I decided to become vegan. There was no choice for me after seeing photos and reading about what is done to those precious animals. Thank you, Barbara. Thanks, Barbara, and thank you for reminding us that when we choose a vegan lifestyle, our choices extend so beyond ourselves. When we eat a vegan diet, we are telling factory farms that we're not going to take it anymore, and we're going to stand up for animals, and we're going to protect animals. Barbara is 78 years old, and she changed her diet for animals. Last week, we talked about the connection between factory farming and the severe impact on the environment. So there are so many reasons to embrace a plant-based diet. Whatever your reason is, it leads to compassion, and you are putting something very positive out into the world. And I am here to help and serve you every step of the way. Now, let's talk about another inspiring woman. Her name is Sandy Gooch, and she was, and still is, a leader in the health and wellness natural foods industry, and you need to know her. Sandy Gooch's journey began in Southern California's hippie chic 70s, She was surrounded with sun-drenched landscapes that were flooded with light and space. And it was a breeding ground for music that reflected that light, like the Beach Boys, Joni Mitchell, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. It was an idyllic place, and Sandy had an idyllic life. She loved teaching. She spent her days teaching at a local schoolhouse, in her evenings caring for her daughter. But suddenly, everything came crashing down in 1974 when she became violently ill with seizures.
When I was sick, I did not know if I would live the next day. And when the next day came, I didn't know if I would live the following day. Feelings of disorientation, inability to think clearly, pains again radiating down my chest and into my arms, weakness. So I did not know if I would live or die. And for that matter, I wasn't sure that I wanted to live under the given circumstances that I was experiencing.
Sandy's illness was a mystery, and all the specialists at the hospital failed to heal her. They even hinted that it may be psychosomatic. Her father, Buck Buckner, didn't believe that, and he was determined to find out the cause of her illness.
My father was a research biologist and chemist. At one time, he owned his own wholesale pharmaceutical house. He had to really think about cause and effect. What was causing this? He realized that there were answers out there. He deducted that really what was happening was sets of enzymes in my system were being knocked over, actually like a set of dominoes, due to the reaction that I had to the tetracycline. There were no medicines to help me. And my father, after his research, said the only thing that you can really do is to heal yourself. And by doing research, he realized that food would probably be the answer.
Eventually, her father figured out that the combination of foods that Sandy had eaten, combined with the doses of tetracycline she was taking for an earache, had weakened her enzymes. The last thing Sandy consumed before her first seizure was a Fresca. Her father realized that the bromelated vegetable oil in the diet drink acted like a bomb in Sandy's system. Her father convinced Sandy to throw out all foods with chemicals and additives.
So literally, one day, I opened up my kitchen cupboard and my refrigerator and threw out everything that wasn't real. Artificial flavor, artificial colors, hydrogenated fats, refined white flour, you name it, out it went. And in place of those foods with an ick, ite or an aid at the end of some of those words, came in foods that were fresh, real, whole, and organic. It was a task because in the 1970s, there weren't really that many places that you could go to find real foods. So I went from Santa Barbara to San Diego to find the things that I would need for my Los Angeles kitchen. It was a chore, but I was determined and dedicated.
But unfortunately, there were setbacks because of the many hidden chemicals in foods.
There was a span of about 3.5 years where I would have setbacks. And I would think, why? And some of them would be hidden chemicals I remember I had a fourth of a glass of beer once and went right back to where I was many years prior, feelings of disorientation, etc. Realized that there were chemicals in that beer, preservatives, that were not listed because it was a draft beer. I can remember having chicken, buying it from a butcher, and coming home and cooking it, eating 1/4 of a drumstick, and being in agony, pains in my chest, pacing up and down. What in the world is going on? I called my father, and he talked to the Department of Agriculture. In those days, it was a state law that all chicken raised in other states passing into the state of California had to be dipped in tetracycline, the very drug that was lethal to me. The government felt that by cooking the chicken, of course, all of that antibiotic would be removed, but not true for somebody as sensitive as I.
But like many seemingly harrowing events that happen in life, Sandy Gooch's near-death experience had a silver lining and led to the birth of an industry. And it all began with her sharing her experiences.
One day, while giving a lecture to people about healthy foods, a woman in the audience said, "Well, we have the same problem that you do. So you know a lot about it. Why don't you open up a store that has all the foods that you're talking about?" I thought, as a school teacher, all things are possible. Why not? So in January of 1977, I opened up the first natural food store that was really a supermarket. It was an old A&P store that had gone out of business. And I opened that up with foods that did not have any of those aforementioned unmentionables. No refined flour, no sugar, no artificial flavor, artificial colors, additives, and preservatives. It was an overnight success.
I was very curious about her clientele and the kind of people that were shopping for healthy organic food in the 70s.
It was really a phenomenon. We had people coming from the Santa Monica Mountains who were Rastafarians in their interesting outfits, and we had people coming from Beverly Hills. And they all mingled and talked and interfaced one with the other.
I asked Sandy, who was driving the movement back then, and why was there any awareness around real food?
Well, there was some awareness because Adele Davis had written some of her books, and there were other scientists and writers out there who were talking about real food and good food. So many people were now starting to read, do research, and were looking for a better way. They just didn't know where to go. Now and then there would be a little health food store that might have 500 square feet, but nothing of the size of a supermarket where you could find everything that you needed.
Sandy spent months finding products for the store that fit her unyielding standards. No refined sugar, flour, artificial colors, preservatives, or caffeine were allowed in her stores. "You don't have to be afraid anymore" was stamped on her shopping bags. You never had to read a food label at Mrs. Gooch's because you knew it was safe. Imagine that.
Well, as we added more stores, there was more awareness in regard to Mrs. Gooch's. And as a matter of fact, the Wall Street Journal did an article on us. There were the Los Angeles Times, the New York Times also wrote articles on Mrs. Gooch's because it was quite a phenomenon. By 1990, we were the largest grossing chain of natural product markets in the world, really. And so that was quite a phenomenon, and therefore people would write about it. We had tremendous consumer loyalty because of the trust that was there, people knowing that what they purchased really was what they were thinking they were purchasing. And so the trust was just phenomenal. People, I remember, would fly in from New York and be on a business trip or whatever, stop at a Mrs. Gooch's, pick up foods, put them in the suitcase, and go back to New York. And they would ask us to ship foods to them wherever they were. And, of course, this was way before Amazon and so forth, which we would do. The fact that movie stars frequented our stores, too, Michael Jackson, Lauren McCall, I mean, you name it, the movie stars were in our stores. Why? Well, it wasn't only the cachet, but these movie stars, they depended upon really looking well, looking beautiful, wonderful, healthy. If they didn't, they weren't going to get a job. And so they knew that these foods would help to refresh their bodies and give them the energy and the stamina and the shining eyes that they needed for their work.
Sandy was very ahead of her time because she knew how to build a tribe. Sandy often described her customers as advocates. I asked her to explain what she meant by that.
As a business person and as an entrepreneur, you think in terms of customers, but that's the first level. Because a customer can be fickle. A customer might come to you when you're having a sale or when you're having coupons or whatever it might be. That's the customer. And they come and go. The advocate truly believes in you. The advocate, research shows, will tell 10 other people about their experience and about the store or the product. So really what you want is the advocate because they are the best advertisement that you can have. They are going to tell others about their wonderful, positive experience.
So where did Sandy get her entrepreneur spirit? And was it tough being a woman in a male-dominated grocery business?
In regard to being a woman, it was very different. When I would go to some of the meetings of people in supermarkets, owners of supermarkets, etc., I would be the only woman. There would be 150 CEOs and presidents from all over the country, and I would be the only woman. Occasionally, there would be a few secretaries or assistants who would be there, but I was it. So it was quite a shock to me. I did not realize at the time that it would be like that. I go back to how my father treated me as a child and even as an adult. I was never told that I had to do things a certain way because I was a woman. When I would go into his wholesale pharmaceutical company, E.L. Buckner Medical Supplies, he just put me right to work and I would experience how he would do things. And so I, naively so, thought that life would be kind of like that in a business. But lo and behold, it really wasn't. So there were many, many hurdles to cross along the way with acceptance.
I then asked her, where did you get the money to open your business?
Yes, getting money to open up the first store and to expand the second store and the third store. And I'll use as an example, with the first store that I opened up, I opened it with my own savings, my teacher retirement money. I had been a teacher for many years. And so I had saved enough money to have the initial capital investment. But we were so successful that I really needed to have more money to buy more product. I know it sounds very weird and strange, but that was the case. That was very, very difficult. In going to the bank to try and get more money for the first store, Bank of America, others, they would not loan to me. The model that I had opened was not any kind of health food store model. Therefore, they wouldn't. And they had never had any record of loaning to a woman for that kind of thing. With the second store, the first store being very successful, I went to banks to try and get a loan. No bank would loan to me. Yes, they would if it were a man, but certainly not a woman. So the second store was done with limited partnerships. But even then, I had to scrounge and get more money of my own to become one of the limited partners. Store three, now we have two very successful stores. I went to banks. They would not loan to me. So store three was really done on cash flow from the first two stores. Store four, finally, there was a bank that would loan me the money to start store four. And so it was quite a process in those days.
I had to know by now, did she ever get discouraged?
There were times when I became discouraged. Politics in the categories of foods, finding companies that were not honest in what they presented, working at a project that did not come to fruition, and of course in that time just being a woman was really difficult. But with all those discouragements that I had, interspersed with a lot of positive things, was my passion about my business, which helped to drive me and also helped my employees to understand how dedicated I was.
I asked Sandy what advice she would give to a young entrepreneur just starting out today.
My advice to a young entrepreneur starting out today is to do something that you are passionate about. You have to have the passion. Then to do the research and the study to inform yourself about what steps to take, how to do whatever it is that you want to do. Well, when you start a business, many people make the mistake of doing too much too soon. I always say, do the baby steps first. Know how things work, what works, what doesn't work, and then incorporate the next steps so that it's really in terms of plateaus of what you are working on, accomplishing, etc. No pie in the sky at the very beginning, but to use your mind and your passion to see what all is possible, but don't accomplish it all in one fell swoop.
Sandy was uncompromising and hired laboratories to test products to make sure labeling was correct. Products that met her standards became known across the industry as Gooched.
Well, actually, the expression is Goochable. And Goochable was something that we used. Actually, it was turned by the various distributors and suppliers that we had, because our buyers, when somebody, a representative or somebody from a company would come in and say, you need to buy this new product, we would say, well, here's our criteria, here's our list. No artificial flavors, artificial colors, you know, on and on. No refined white flour. Show us the list of your ingredients and the how the product is made, etc. And they would need to comply with test results and so forth. So within the industry, when they would, these people would go to other natural product stores, which were now sprouting up all over the country, they would say, well, you don't need to do this research because it's already in Mrs. Gooch's markets. Therefore, it's Goochable. And that is how the term started. And to this day, interestingly enough, it is used.
In 1993, Mrs. Gooch's was the largest grossing natural products market in the world. She had 7 stores, 830 employees, and annual sales of $90 million. In September, the company was acquired by Whole Foods Market. The stock was eventually valued at $63 million. I asked Sandy what it was like to give up her business.
To merge with Whole Foods was such a unique experience. Of course, I'd never had an experience like that in my business life. So it was fraught with excitement and a lot of research, etc. Once Mrs. Gooch's merged with Whole Foods, and we were actually acquired by Whole Foods in September of 1993, I had to walk out the door. They really wanted to do things on their own. For me, emotionally, it was like having to give up your own child. And I was very disheartened and sad for over a year. It took me quite a while to recover and recuperate from that process. But it would almost be like giving your child up to a good home that would be adopting that child for whatever reason. And so you would take heart in knowing that that child would be with a parent, Whole Foods, that would do its best to have that company survive and thrive, acquired and then merged into its own standards, etc. I now walk into Whole Foods and I see how expansive it is. I mean, they're working on 400 markets throughout our country, Canada and the United Kingdom. And they're a successful company offering foods that were never available in the 1960s and 70s to a variety of people. So one has to be happy about that opportunity for so many communities that didn't have it in the past.
Sandy also shares her thoughts about food safety and food traceability in 2016.
What is food safety? Is it just about how something is refrigerated, frozen, processed, washed, cleaned? Or is it also about how food is grown, how food is prepared? What are the ingredients? Because what really makes a safe community with food? It's a very detailed complex situation to consider. It's not just lineal.
Well, that led me to the question of how do consumers maneuver themselves around this confusing food industry?
Yes, indeed, it is confusing because there are so many ads out there touting this product and that product. And of course, the government stating certain things about feature this, feature that, the food pyramid has changed, and so on and so forth along the way. So how do you maneuver? And then what does your pocketbook say too? What can you afford? What I tell people is that you can vote with your wallet in regard to the kinds of foods that are being given to us to purchase. You can vote with your pocketbook by purchasing foods that are whole and real, and I would say organic.
After Mrs. Gooch's merged her stores with Whole Foods, she asked herself the question, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? The answer was easy. Spread her health and wellness message beyond supermarkets. So Sandy brought her message to inmates in Los Angeles jails.
I worked with the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors in regard to doing a pilot project relating to inmates in the county jail system and the foods that they were eating and had eaten. Because the research that we did indicated that oftentimes the people that wound up in jail had a very poor diet. It seemed to be going hand in hand. Poor diet with sugar, refined foods, foods that were not real. The homes that they came from did not offer them a good diet, etc. And so when they wound up incarcerated in the jails, oftentimes the food served there was not much better. Mm-hmm. White flour, a lot of fat, canned foods, canned beans, canned vegetables, you name it, because they were on a budget. But we turned that around and we brought in foods that were real and whole. And what we found out was when these people got out of jail, the recidivism rate was far less than with those inmates that did not have this new real whole diet. It was unbelievable the difference and the change with these people that were given real food.
Sandy Gooch's accolades extended far beyond her many plaques, awards for entrepreneurship and for being a visionary leader in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. What Sandy Gooch did was single-handedly pioneer a natural foods revolution for everyday people. Whole Foods CEO and co-founder John Mackey said, Sandy's passion for high-quality standards helped improve the integrity of the entire industry. I asked Sandy how she would want to end this interview, and she said this.
I used to end my lectures with a statement, and that was, ignore your health, and it will surely go away. And so for those communities that are interested in wellness, they can form groups, they can have community gardens, they can do training of teachers in schools to help with students, they can form organizations, they can collectively help to change and alter what is going on with the growing of food here in the United States and other places in our world to promote their health, the community's health, and actually global health, the health of our planet. It is very important. We don't have much time left to turn some of this around. We can vote with our pocketbook. We don't have to buy foods that have genetically modified organisms. We don't have to do that. We can ask stores to carry other kinds of foods. We don't have to buy processed foods. We have a choice. Let's make that choice. Let's vote with our pocketbook.
Thanks so much to Sandy Gooch for sharing her extraordinary story. And thanks to all of you for joining us today. I really appreciate your feedback. You have no idea how much it means to me. So keep those questions, thoughts, and feedback coming. You can send me an email at questions@ordinaryvegan.net, or I have this very cool recorder on my website at ordinaryvegan.net, and all you have to do is hit the black record button and send me a voice message. You can find me and all my podcasts online at ordinaryvegan.net/playlist or on iTunes. Just search for Ordinary Vegan. If you get a minute, please write a review on iTunes, because the more reviews the podcast gets, the more prominently it will be featured in iTunes, which means reaching more people with our plant-based message. I will post an iTunes link in this week's show notes located at ordinaryvegan.net/Sandy Gooch. We also have an amazing supportive health and wellness community on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/ordinaryvegan and hit like. One last thing I would like to mention is that I will be doing a plant-based demonstration on stage on April 30th at Central Park in Glendale for a very special Earth Day event. I will be making my grilled portobello mushroom over cauliflower mash smothered in vegan gravy. And I would like to take a moment to thank Whole Foods in Glendale for supplying free cauliflower and portobello mushrooms for the event for everyone who attends. And I also would like to thank Bragg for supplying free samples of their amazing B12 fortified nutritional yeast and other Bragg products. Not only that, Whole Foods in Glendale will be serving Ordinary Vegans portobello mushroom over cauliflower mash smothered in gravy on their hot bar all day on April 30th. Thank you, Whole Foods Glendale, and thank you, Bragg.com, for your generosity. That's it for today. Till next time.
Thanks for joining our plant-based community today. Together, we can accomplish great things. Please subscribe so you don't miss any of Ordinary Vegan's recipes and plant-based tips. If you have any questions or feedback, email us at questions@ordinaryvegan.net. Until next time.